Welcome everyone to Electronic Talks podcast, episode number 4. We have a special guest today that we're very happy to have here. It's the DJ and producer Art Alfie. Welcome.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you here. How are you doing?
Doing pretty good.
Yeah?
Yes. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're happy to have you here. How are you doing in 2021? What are you up to these days?
Oh, well, I don't know about 2021 yet. We'll see.
Yeah.
But 2020 was interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it was probably a tough year for everyone.
Yeah, definitely.
But, I mean, it wasn't too bad for me, I think. It was okay. I had some good stuff, some bad stuff.
Yeah.
2021, we'll see. I'm going to take the opportunity to make a little projection. Is that what it's called?
Okay, yeah, for sure.
I think 2021 is going to be, it's going to be a wild ride.
Really? Really? Yeah. I have that feeling too. Mm. Definitely. Are you in a kind of a productive mode, or are you, what kind of mode are you in?
Yes. I've been quite productive, making a lot of music. Also started a couple of new projects. Produced a piano album for like a classical trained pianist.
Wow. I'm
hopefully going to try to get out there this year. And also been working a lot of my own stuff. I have a lot of music in the vault. I'm going to try to get an output for this year.
That's perfect. How was it working with a classical album? Have you done that before, or was it the first time?
It was the first time. It's not exactly a classical album. It's not a classical album, but he's a classically schooled pianist, so it's a very technically sound and very good pianist. But we had a great chemistry.
Yeah.
Yes, there was something interesting happening in the meeting.
Wow.
Yes, and we actually been doing some small concerts. Very small concerts during the whole fall, but just like 15 people in a rather large space.
And in those concerts, were you also, what were you doing live?
Just kind of handling backtracks and effects and trying to make it as easy as possible for me. Wow. And I'm not really on stage, I'm kind of in the background.
So what's the name of this pianist, if someone wants to find him?
Goiano.
Uh-huh. Excellent.
Yes, he's been like playing in the streets for a few years, just like making his, like the core of his living from that, and then started making like techno parties.
Okay.
And so he's kind of into that scene, but it's absolutely not a house or dance music album. It's more of a piano album.
Great, great.
Yes, I'm very happy with it. So we'll see. See what happens.
Yeah, that's very exciting to have something a little bit different going on, right?
Yes.
Mm. And speaking about more of a classical background or the entrance into music, could you tell us a little bit about your musical background? Like, what made you get into music from the start?
From the start, I don't know. I think like the first types of music I started digging around in as a kid was more like rock and roll. That went on to like punk and hardcore. And I learned to play guitar back then. And then I had a hardcore band.
Really?
Called Slacker.
Nice. I love that name.
Yeah. And from there on, it went on to hip hop, but I never really made anything then. Like other stuff kind of came in the way. So I wasn't making music myself for a long time. And then I was quite old when I heard like good dance music for the first time. Like I grew up, I lived in Gävle until I was 16. So
okay,
I remember hearing Snap Rhythm as a Dancer and was just like, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah.
But besides from that, I didn't really hear any good dance music until I remember there was this tour. I think it was in the 90s with around Sweden. Like they gathered a few bands and some DJs and just went around in Sweden. It was called Kalasturnén.
Okay, yeah.
They had like Bob Hund and Thåström and whatnot. And I went to that And afterwards, there was some DJs from Stockholm playing. Mm-hmm. And I remember just like, wow, what is this stuff?
Yeah.
But this was also before like Napster and everything. So you couldn't just like get online and like figure out what it was. So it took me a while to kind of navigate. Mm-hmm. But then from my early 20s, I've been pretty much focused on dance music.
Yeah. And when you were navigating, was it like going to Stockholm, going to record shops, or how did it come about?
And I started to go with like older friends to parties in Stockholm. And from there, and I think the first touchdown was like the tribal progressive scene of the like the around the millennia.
Yeah.
Which is still something I'll go back to every now and then.
Nice. Mm-hmm. And from this kind of initial interest, what made you take the turn to become a producer, actually? Was there a specific moment, or was it just something that...
I was kind of interested to dig deeper. And a friend of mine that I was living with at the time showed me Fruit Loops or FL Studio. And I just started doing that as sort of a pastime because I thought it was fun. Like instead of playing video games or whatever, I was just playing around with that. But I didn't really have anyone else around me that was into like house and techno, and no one that could really show me anything. So it wasn't until like a few years later I decided to take a course. And they taught me like more properly like what it was about, like the technical side of it. So yeah, and it also took me a long time to, when you write music for like a punk band or a hardcore band or whatever, it's like, or pop too, it's a completely different approach. And you kind of, you milk different elements, so to speak. And you can't translate that directly into dance music. Well, you can, but it turns into like EDM or something else. It's like it's a different thing. And that took me a long time to kind of reteach myself.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that, coming from traditional songwriting and going into that and trying to do quality dance music.
It's hard, and a lot of people underestimate it. I saw Prince a few years ago, and you could tell he did like the intro song, and he was like, yeah, I'm gonna do that Swedish House Mafia thing, this is so easy. And I was like, oh my god, this is so horrible.
Yeah,
but then it kind of, I mean, then he started doing his thing after a while, and that was cool. But yeah.
Yeah, of course. It's Prince. So yeah. Excellent. So you took a music course and you started producing. And what happened next?
I think in my music, I started working at Landet, a restaurant and club and a small scene here in Stockholm. And I had took care of Landet, like the music side of Landet, for the first few years. And there I met my friend Adrian, Adrian Lux. And he was making music with a guy called Nils Westerlund. And we ended up forming some sort of trio.
Nice.
Called Les Joies. And we were actually playing quite a bit there for a while. And like also touring a bit in Sweden. And for a while there, I was actually making a living from DJing, but mainly like locally, like playing a lot. And we like drifted apart a little bit musically for a little bit. And I decided to quit DJing.
Actually,
like I'm done with this now. It's been a good run. I graduated my university degree. I went to law school.
Okay.
And then I didn't really have any intention to work as a lawyer. I just wanted to get a diploma and then like try to do my own thing. So I started a couple of companies with some friends. And then during this time, I met Rudolf, Mr. Top Hat. I met him from before, and he was super young when we first met. I was a bit older than him.
Yeah.
And we just kept in touch. And like one of the times when we hooked up, we made some music together. That was... I think the first song was Marlboro Light.
Oh, okay.
And before that one was completely done, we started on King Hassan. And before that was done, we've done like Stick Baby. And then like after a while, we had like a few songs that was like, this is really good stuff. We should release this. So we just kind of put that out. Actually, we sent it around first to a bunch of labels. No one really picked up on it, even though like they afterwards kind of picked up on it.
I see. They came back when...
I love this stuff. I'm like, yeah, we sent it to you as a demo, man. So we released that and that just kind of took off for us at that point. And we started touring a bunch and I sold my shares in the companies that we started. And ever since then, it's been all music for me.
Yeah. And that was Karlovac.
That was Karlovac, yeah. We started Karlovac just to release those tracks.
Yeah. And what would you say, what has been the... That was kind of an explosion for you guys, right? Or how would you see the progression when you started the label and released the tracks? Like how was the response? Just to continue on that.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a explosion, but it was definitely something organic that was driving it forward, that it was just very well received.
Yeah.
A lot of people liked it. A lot of our heroes liked it and started to get invited to come play in clubs here and there.
And what do you think was the kind of special thing in the collaboration between you and Rudolf or Mr. Top Hat?
I don't know. We definitely had really good chemistry, like creatively.
Yeah.
It's hard to pinpoint it.
Yeah.
I also kind of feel the same thing now with the piano album, when it's just like two different people meet and there's just this creative spark between that is, I don't know. I also don't really want to jinx it. I don't want to talk too much about it, but it's sometimes it's just like things fall in place. I don't know. It's interesting with to be creative with someone else too, at least with music, because it can be super beneficial. Like, When you start with a song, you sit with all the sounds and you kind of develop a loop. You kind of get lost. You can't see the forest because all the trees in a way.
Yeah.
But then someone else can come in and just be like immediately like, yes, it's all about this sound here. You should start with that and then bring on this one and then take that away and then that in. Which is very hard to do when you've been sitting with the sounds for a long time. So it can be very beneficial. To work two people when it works out.
So you kept on, you were touring quite a lot with that.
With that and then just by myself for a few years and now it's obviously kind of stopped. But
yeah.
We'll see.
But how was the transition when you first, because you've been releasing quite a few releases as a solo artist since then as well. And how was the transition for you to go, since you said it's a different kind of process,
I don't know. I've also been making music by myself during the whole time, so it wasn't that big of a deal. I just kept on doing it, but you had to do it all yourself. I mean, there's good stuff with that and there's bad stuff, but it's okay.
Yeah. And you've, throughout the years, you've released very big amount of EPs, but so far one album, right?
One album, yeah.
Yeah, and how that's Reveries Off, obviously. And what was the benefit of releasing that album, do you see, of gathering songs in that way? Could you kind of see it in a different light or?
I mean, I think you have to have like some sort of something, a new kind of like a context or whatever that you want to show off if you make an album.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense to make an album with 10 EP tracks or like.
No.
You have to like have some sort of world you want to build or something. And for me at that point it was a good timing because I actually made the album maybe like a year and a half or 2 years before it came out, but it was like I could do stuff that didn't really fit in the Karlovac collaboration. There was a bit more melody, a bit more, I don't know, it's a little bit different,
more melodic or different,
and a little less dance floor focus, and it was just a step away in a different direction, so that was interesting for me, and also like super happy to release on Studio Barnes.
Oh, of course, yeah,
fucking legendary label.
Yes, definitely. So
that was something I'm very, very proud of, I suppose you could say. Yeah. Happy about and thankful. Mm. And now I'm working at a new album or a few, perhaps. I don't know.
Okay, yeah. Exciting.
Yes.
So you're in Reveries Off, you have the cover that is kind of going inside of your head, inside your mind.
Yes.
Like, is that kind of the trip you're on, or what is the... have you continued on that kind of beat? Or
I think so. It's another it's another step in the same direction, I would say.
Mm.
But one more step away.
Yeah. And between then and now, you were also working on another label, right?
Yes, I started like a small label called Velvet Pony.
Yeah,
for myself, and just I wanted to be just to have an output for myself and friends, and I wanted to keep it very IRL in a way.
Yeah,
I don't really accept demos. I'm not looking to release any big names. I just want to put out all the good stuff that I hear around me all the time.
Yeah,
that was the beginning of it. Like this, like, and also it's like the. A lot of times when I DJ, it's mostly, not most of it, a lot of unreleased stuff from just like myself and friends and people around me here in Stockholm or that I have like relationships with.
Mm.
So I thought it would be cool to have a platform for that.
Definitely, definitely. Mm. And being able to kind of output the stuff that you're playing anyways and the stuff you're hearing.
Yes.
Mm.
So so far I've been... been going pretty good. I really like the output, and I think we're on the 9th release getting pressed right now.
Great, yes. Great.
It's and yeah.
So the first. Have you announced it yet, or
no?
No. Okay.
Just waiting to get back the. I have the Digimasters, but I'm waiting to get. Want to get the test press and the date.
Okay.
It's a VA from. Think it's a song from myself.
Hmm.
It's one from an Italian guy called Luca Casal that I've met like over the years.
Yeah.
And there's one song from Adrian Lux and Loon.
Okay.
Like the people behind his smash hit Teenage Crime.
I think this is
actually now they released a song together, but so
exciting.
Otherwise it would have been the first song from them since Teenage Crime, but yeah, they did one now. And then there's one song from Måns Glaser and one song from Sebastian Gudding and Andy Roddick.
Okay.
Did I forget one now? I think that was it. Excellent. Otherwise, I'll apologize.
No worries, no worries. And we can expect that in 2021 then.
Yeah, for hopefully. Sure, as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Next couple of months.
Great. And you'll announce that on your Velvet Pony label.
Yes, there and wherever you can. But it's super hard to get the message out these days. They've been tightening up the algorithms. Or I haven't learned them properly or whatever.
Yeah, we'll make sure to link both the Velvet Pony and your page.
Thank you.
For anyone interested, of course. Interesting. But you also have a little... kind of side project on with mixes called Millie Islands, right?
Oh yeah. I started a mixtape series.
Nice.
Yeah, and it's like just what the world needs.
Yeah,
another mixtape series.
Yeah.
No, but I've always been making mixes for myself with my own music. It's just like unreleased because it's nice to navigate in your own vault.
Yeah.
You're like you kind of get a better idea what's good, what's not good. It's like sometimes you think of a song in a certain way and you try to mix it in with another song that you think it will work with. And you're like, oh, this is not really that vibe. This is more like that. And it's a good thing to navigate mixes for yourself. And I also think like that it's super unique. Like the kind of you get drawn into the sounds. I'm very happy about those mixes.
Nice. Like which mixes have you released so far?
So far, it's been Luxy, Adam Strömstedt, one for myself, and Lucas Nystrand from Unge.
Okay, and the concept is basically it's only your own songs.
Yes,
and it's unreleased or a mix.
Unreleased.
Yeah, unreleased.
Unreleased songs from yourself.
Wow.
And it's. the idea come from a few different places, I would say. Like one is from the southern hip hop scenes that were very driven by giving out mixtapes.
Yeah.
Like the whole the name of the mixtape series is a little nod to Lil Wayne.
Okay, yeah.
His smash hit Amelie Islands. But also like from different experiences and also from what I've told in the beginning, how I've been always making those kind of mixes for myself.
Yeah.
Because it's been beneficial for my own creative process. Mm. And also that I remember like a long time ago, I went with Adrian to Uppsala.
Mm.
And he had some sort of live-ish set. And I was there and I knew like all the songs from before. And I could see how like the whole, like the kind of drew people in a way.
Yeah.
Because there's this red thread that goes mm-hmm. through all the songs. It's the same producer. So it kind of sticks together in a different way. Even though the songs could perhaps be completely different in one way. There's also this red line that connects them.
Yeah.
It's something quite interesting.
Yeah.
And it's also a little bit, I think this, people make music a little bit in different ways.
Mm.
It seems like there's some people, they make like one track and they make that track and they work on that like 1 month and then they release it. So they don't really have a vault, but a lot of people have like loads of music. Like I have a lot of music and it's like, I try to pick like the little diamonds to release or something that's special, but it's not like the other music doesn't fill a purpose.
Yeah.
So you can kind of put them together into like a new entity and you can kind of get some sort of 1+1=3 effect from doing it. That I think is interesting. And I'm very happy about this project. I'm looking forward to continue it. And it's going to be like all different genres and styles and so forth. And the first mixes here has been absolutely amazing.
Yeah, they're really special. It's a different concept, and you can hear that than from a normal kind of DJ mix.
That's so great. Yeah, that was the idea, that even though there's a lot of mixtape series, no one's really doing this, so hopefully it will catch on.
Yeah, and it's great, as you say, because often, you know, these producers or artists, they sit on a lot of music that no one will basically ever hear.
No, and so it doesn't really make sense to release it either. Yeah. It's like you have other stuff or you like it's not.
Or you're maybe self-conscious about it.
Maybe it's like it's not really album material and you have other stuff for EPs or whatever, something that sticks out more, but it's still, there's still worth to be heard a little bit.
Definitely. So that project is going to go on through this year as well. Yes. And
hopefully, as long as I can keep on gather mixes.
Exactly. Great. And why did you add, let's say it's Amelie came from the Lil Wayne reference, but why this concept about islands?
I don't know. Because whatever, like the artists and their sounds, they're like a little island. It's like one, I'm trying to, I'm scrambling for the words in English here.
Yeah, no worries.
It's like a tydligt avgränsad in Swedish.
Mm.
Like with the.
It's you have clear boundaries.
Yeah, it's
right?
Like a clear boundary on sound. Mm. Here's like, it's like an entity, one entity with the artist and the sound.
Yeah.
It's sort of similar to an island.
Yeah, and I like kind of the mental image of that. You'll be sitting there, a little island or their little thing, and it's kind of one, as you say, like it's one entity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also it's been super fun to look for islands. They remind you of the sound.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's kind of a journey for you as well in some way. Yeah. So I was also thinking a little bit, I heard this is completely unrelated, but I heard this funny anecdote that once when you have a child, right?
Yes.
And you were listening to the child you were listening to the heartbeat of the child.
Yes.
And you turned that into a track? Or what did you do with that? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I recorded the heartbeat when we were at the checkup.
Mm.
And I just put it in Ableton and it had a little beat to it.
Nice.
I made a song of it.
Nice. Yeah. And you did you never release that? It was
no,
just for yourself?
No, it's not released. I played it out though a few times. It's a pretty cool, it's more of a tool.
Do you hear, cool so tool. It's really, you hear the tuk, tuk,
tuk, tuk. Yeah. Yeah. But it's with when they're so small, it's kind of fast and higher.
Okay, okay. So it's more of a
It's almost eights. I can't remember. I think I pitched it down a little bit though, oh. Just to put it on like the four, like four to the floor.
Yes. Yeah. Is that kind of indicative for your creative process in some way? Are you very open to like gathering sounds or samples or influences quite from wherever or?
Yes. Mm. I've been sampling a little bit less lately.
Yeah,
or actually a lot less. Just been more into playing synths by myself.
And yeah,
but I still use a lot of like field recordings and like weird stuff I find. But then, actually, I've been sampling a lot lately. Now I'm sitting and lying, but like in general, I've been sampling a lot less lately. But I was asked to do some remixes and edits for a reissue label.
Okay,
called Fantasy Love that is run by. Leolix and another guy called James and they find the obscure bangers and re-release them, so they have a little catalog. So I've done a few edits and remixes or not remixes but sampling from that and we're gonna do something around that, I think.
Wow, that point. Sounds exciting.
It's
is it from a specific era or is it more kind of from different periods?
70s, 80s, I would say.
Yeah. Okay.
Like funk, a bit of disco.
Nice.
But I was going to show one of the original songs for a friend the other day. So I couldn't find the video of it. And they hadn't done their release yet.
Right.
Couldn't find a video, but I went into the Discog page for it.
Yeah.
And it was like, I've never seen a page like this.
Yeah.
It's like 250 won, never sold.
Oh,
and like
wow.
Someone had like written in the comments like, yeah, I really want this record, hit me up. And then it was just like a bunch of people making fun of him.
Okay. Wow. But then it seems like the great idea to re-edit it or
I mean for them, but they're super diggers.
Yeah.
And like Leolix is amazing taste in music and like the best digger and like a lot of like the stuff I've been sampling over the years have come from him in one way or the other.
Yeah, okay, really?
Not a lot, but some of it, like at least some of the more prominent stuff, like this one song, Easy to Love, for example. That's from a sample that I got from Leolix.
Okay.
He's like next level digger.
I see. What about you? Are you a crate digger? Are you a lot about finding records? And
yes and no. I mean, I like to go... And search for records and listen to stuff, but I'm not really like, I don't have like a catalogizing brain.
I see.
Like I remember names of labels or artists and songs. I remember like, I can remember songs from my burnt CDs, how I'd written on the little paper in the folder and kind of where in the folder it's at.
Yes.
But I can't remember the name of the song or the artist. But that song.
More kind of an image.
On that CD, that's in that case. So I think it's better suited if you're like, you like to collect stuff and you have a brain that remembers in that way. It makes you, I think you're more inclined to be that sort of a digger. I mean, I keep track of my stuff and I follow my labels and my artists, and I rather buy records from the €1 bin than from the €50 bin.
And kind of find something randomly.
Yes. And don't make things so difficult for myself. Just like, do I like this? Do I not like this?
Yeah.
Like, yes, no, yes, no.
Yeah. Go with the feeling.
Yes. So that's something that I really enjoy doing. If you're out traveling, you have a few hours, so like just go to a record shop, pick out like 10 records that for whatever reason seems a bit interesting, and just go through them and see if you find something you like.
Yeah, Yeah, that's definitely a good activity for sure.
Kill a few hours.
Yeah. So you're not this kind of classic collector type, but you kind of mentioned that recently, even though you've done sound sampling, you've been a lot like working with synths and synth sounds. Could you talk a little bit about that process? Like what kind of synths are you working with, and what kind of sounds are you looking for?
I just wanted to move away from sampling a little bit because you have to keep on moving in your creative process, and I want to play more and find out more. And I don't have like super lot of synthesizers. I have a few, borrowed a few, like, but the one that I like the most is probably my SH2. It's been around for a while.
Mm-hmm. How would you characterize that sound?
Like gritty analog, very good for basses.
Ah, okay, so for bass lines and stuff like that.
I also think that a lot of the newly made synthesizers are pretty good and also great value.
Yeah.
Especially compared to a lot of the old ones.
It seems like kind of a dangerous track to go into, getting, you know, these synthesizers from like the 70s and 80s and, you know.
Yeah, they're just becoming more. They haven't gone down in price as long as I've kept track. So
yeah,
maybe it's a pretty safe way to store your money. I don't know. But
yeah,
one start to wonder when I don't know. For me personally, I can't find it, like the way my economy looks now. I'm not going to pay 4,000 euros for a drum machine for like a 909 or whatever.
Yeah.
And I like my Novation drum station.
Yeah, come on. Yeah. I mean, as many people say, it's not just a tool, it's the process as well, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's something like the way you make music with the synthesizer. I think sometimes that's almost like the biggest thing, that you just like play stuff and you record it and you get it in audio right away. You can't mess around with it. Like the software synthesizers, they are great too, but they're a bit, for me, I find them a little bit more tricky to work with in a way, because it can sound really good, and then you start to, like, you pull a little part, a little knob here and a little knob there, and then you don't really realize until afterwards that, like, fuck, now it sounds like shit.
Oh right, yeah, and then you've already altered it.
Yeah, you're
into,
not really sure what it was. Was it that I changed the release that made it sound like plastic or whatever?
Yeah, that's very true.
But with the analog, you just record it right away.
So you mentioned briefly when you were talking about Adrian Lux doing some live set in Uppsala or whatnot, like that kind of feeling. What's your relationship to live, like the act of playing live or that whole thing?
I played live once. It is difficult, and there's also levels to it. I mean, you can make it super difficult for yourself, or you can make it very simple for yourself. And I mean, there's also a lot of nights have live sets put on.
Yeah,
and I'm not sure if it's because it's that great, or is it because usually shorter, so you can get more names on the flyer without taking up time. I'm not sure.
Yeah, maybe a little bit of both.
Maybe
I don't know.
A little bit of both.
Yeah.
But I'm sure you could do it quite interesting. I did one live set, not last year now, but like the year before.
Yeah.
At the party at Dragon Gate here in
Sweden. Oh, right. Yeah.
That was an amazing party. Mm-hmm. Since I'm from there, my parents live up there, I've been going past that building.
Yeah.
I can just maybe tell everyone. It's like this crazy Chinese guy came here and built like a replica of an, what is it, like a Chinese hotel with a courtyard, and it looks very oriental.
Looks kind of like a Chinese castle, aren't there Buddha statues and all this kind of stuff?
Yeah, big cats, golden cats and stuff. And you've been going past that for all those years, and it's in the middle of the woods. Then my friend here in Stockholm somehow managed to rent it.
Wow.
For like a to do like a proper party. I don't know. It's not gonna it's never going to happen again. It's a one-time thing. It's amazing. And I'm super happy I got to play there.
Didn't that go on for like 2 days straight or what was it? Like,
more
or
like 1 day.
1 day straight. Yeah.
Which is not very common here in Sweden.
No, definitely not.
So I think it was a lot of lucky things fell into place that made it possible.
Yeah. And that was the place you decided like, okay, now I'm going to try this live thing out.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can do a live set. I think he asked me.
Like, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, sure. For that, I'll make a live set. So, I brought a bass player with me.
Okay. Yeah.
Play like the bass lines. So I removed them and I tried to have one thing that I kind of did live on each song. Mm. And then the rest was just backtrack.
Yeah.
So I could have probably done it more that I controlled all the loops and all the sounds.
But right.
I had like one sound for each song and like the bass player.
But yeah. Anyway,
so it's like,
I guess if you're
semi-live.
Yeah. But I still, I guess that's a start for many as well when they're going to start to play live, take it kind of step by step as well.
And also I'm not like a very good musician. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're a better musician, you could like perhaps play like a super tight bass line with one hand and like fiddle around with something else. But
right.
I can't do that.
Yeah. Is it something you're kind of imagining trying out more in the future, or do you feel like that's more of a sidetrack for you?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've been thinking about making Art Alpha into an all out live project.
Oh, really?
And try to maybe turn it into a band, but we'll see.
I see. Yeah.
I don't know.
So kind of going back to your roots in some ways.
Yeah, a little bit, and just let that be that.
Yeah.
Maybe not. We'll see. Mm.
But you seem to really appreciate this kind of interplay between people. Also, when producing, but as you say, like you bring in a bass player or,
Of course. I mean, you can complement each other.
Mm.
And I mean, I'm not really a super skilled musician at all, but I mean, I have friends that are.
Yeah, right.
And I also think there's, I'm actually actively trying to not learn too much music theory.
I see. Yeah.
Because then you can kind of be in another realm when you're creating. But it's also very good to have like those people with you, like with the piano guy that I've been working with there.
Yeah.
He knows all the music theory, but you can tell like when we're trying to find our way, he's kind of thinking, which is good. He comes up with but I'm not thinking because I have nothing to think about. I'm just listening and trying to feel. Does this sound good? How's this make me feel? Like when you change between these chords. Well, he's more in like so I think you probably need a bit of both.
Yeah.
But I don't want to learn too much music theory.
I like that kind of approach as well, because it kind of frees you as well, right?
A little bit.
Yeah. It does.
And it makes you more open, I think.
Mm.
And like you're more I think you make it easier for yourself to catch the lucky mistakes when something is really special, that it's maybe something is like completely wrong. Or like you never heard it, your ear is not accustomed to it, but it makes you feel good or makes you feel something.
Yeah, definitely. And would you say, what kind of, if we kind of sum it up a little bit, like your relationship to music, what role has it played like for you in your life, would you say? And has it changed since like the Karlovac days, or do you still have the same kind of relationship to it?
I think I'm more obsessed with it now since I've been spending so much time with it. I think it's probably the only thing I can... Not the only thing, but it's the thing I have easiest to focus on and to just disappear in like a state of flow or whatever.
Yeah.
Which I struggle with a lot of other stuff.
Mm.
So I don't know. I just pursued what came easiest for me, I think.
Yeah. So it puts you in a state of flow. So this is something, for an instance, you had this period when you stopped DJing, right? Mm.
Yes.
And like, did you stop music then as well, or did you always kind of keep it around? Or
I kept it around because I like to make music,
yeah,
just as a pastime or whatever. I probably always will,
yeah,
because I'd rather do that than to like play cell phone games or watch TV shows or whatever. I just like open up Ableton.
Yeah.
When I'm home and just fiddle around with some loops.
Definitely. Definitely.
It's just where my mind goes.
Yeah.
You could say.
Yeah.
So I'll probably always keep on doing that for sure.
Mm.
One way or the other.
One way or the other. Yeah. But for now you're looking at the upcoming year, the upcoming releases.
Yeah, I have nothing set besides the VA on Velvet Pony.
Mm.
So besides that, nothing is set in stone, and I'm still kind of gathering, sorting out, like trying different combinations of songs and like different sounds. What do you want to put out?
Yeah.
What do you want to like load the gun with or whatever?
If it's an EP or an album. Or
yeah, and what kind of EP could be interesting for me now? And
I guess also thinking about labels that can be suitable for that kind of sound.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Because you worked with quite a variety of labels. You also worked with Toytronics before, for instance.
Toytronics, yes.
How did that come about?
I think they emailed me and asked.
Yeah.
And I've been playing some of their releases. And
mm.
Kind of like the energy and the attitude of the label. So.
Mm.
And I'm very happy about the EP. I thought it was happy it came out.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites. I really love that.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
So I'm happy those songs are out, and I don't know, maybe I should hit him up again.
Yeah, definitely.
I think they're quite full. I think because he usually works, they have like a long, quite well organized and release a lot of stuff, but I think they're probably pretty full.
Yeah, there's always a kind of a back order of stuff that's gonna get released.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Mm.
But like now I'm almost most focused to get the piano music out and find a good home for that.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like kind of hard to kind of grasp the genre or.
Mm. Yes, it's a bit different.
Mm.
But also it's quite accessible.
Mm.
Yet something quite new, I think.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that in my head, I see it as something that everyone can like.
Like I see. So compared to maybe the stuff you've done just under your name, this could be something that possibly, you know, someone who likes other genres of music or.
Yeah, like if you're in, like the people that are into, I don't know, the Eurovision or whatever.
Yeah.
Could probably like this, but also like stuff like my other people like myself or whatever, with people with a bit more slimmer preferences could also like it, it seems. So I have a.
That sounds like a great combination.
Mm.
That's super exciting.
Yes.
So you're kind of in a mode of discovering new soundscapes.
Yeah, with that for sure. Mm. Absolutely. But also with the other stuff. I'm making a lot of more beats almost and like working with having more guests and more vocalists and like instrumentalists coming in the studio. And
that's great. More kind of a different kind of organic experience.
Mm, a little bit, yeah.
Mm. Is there something else that you have going on you want to talk about? Or do you think, it feels like we've mentioned a lot of the stuff going on right now.
Yes. Mm. No, not really. I feel this is the question where if I was a little bit better, I should have thought of something.
No worries. That's kind of my job. But I was just wondering if you had something popping into your head.
No, not really.
You're saying 2021 will be a wild year.
I think so.
Yeah. So we're definitely going to look forward to your output in different ways.
Yes.
And a big, big thank you for coming in today.
Hey,
really
you.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And
it's been a pleasure.
Thanks a lot, Art Alfie. So that's it for today. And make sure to listen to our podcast on audio, or you can also find it on YouTube/Electronic Talks Podcast. Thank you very much.